Thank you to all of you for joining us this evening. As in the past, it's always a great privilege to teach, and especially to teach in this very unusual time. So thank you for making time to learn together with us. In the very beginning of Parshas Vayakhel, we are told, Moshe Rabbeinu gathers in the Jewish people. Vayakhel Moshe's Bnei Yisrael, Vayomer Alehem. Eile hadvarim asher tziva Hashem la'asos osam. These are the things that I'm getting a message that people cannot hear me. Let me raise my volume. Is that better? Okay. Eile hadvarim asher tziva Hashem la'asos osam. These are the various things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has instructed all of us, the Jewish people, to follow. So this is Moshe Rabbeinu giving the detailed instructions of how to build the Mishkan. At the very end of the first aliyah of that parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu tells over everything he's supposed to tell, teaches everything he's supposed to teach, and then the Torah ends off the aliyah by saying, "Vayetzu kaladas b'nei Yisrael milifnei Moshe." The entire Jewish people left from the presence of Moshe. So we all know that every word in the Torah is so carefully measured, and every word that is stated is there for a very particular purpose, which leads the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh to wonder, isn't it obvious if the Torah begins the aliyah by saying that they all came before Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayakhel Moshe, he gathered everyone in together, then obviously once the lesson was over, once the shir was finished, Vayetzu kol hadas b'nei Yisrael milifnei Moshe, of course they all left. Nobody stayed forever. So why does the Torah have to go out of its way to say that everybody left from the presence of Moshe if that is probably an obvious point? Explains the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh two different interpretations, but I'd like to focus our attention this evening on a masterful sefer called Lev Eliyahu, which is written by Rabbi Eliyahu Lapyan, the great Mashgiach, and he has an insight. This insight, I think, gives such particular messages from this pasuk that are relevant to our time, and I also think about it every year after Chag HaShavuos. I try to think about these words and really figure out what it means for all of us as we walk away from Chag HaShavuos. So says Rabbi Eliyahu Lapyan as follows. We walk down the street every day, and we see people coming and we see people going. And some people are walking toward us and other people are walking away from us. And some people that we see seem to be in a big hurry. And others seem to be not in a rush at all. They seem to have all the time on their hands with nowhere to go. Unless we take the time to actually inquire, to ask what it is that these people are engaged in, we would have no idea where they're coming from. And we also have no idea where it is that they may be headed. There's nobody that wears a sign on their chest that states their destination. So they might be on their way to an important business meeting. They might be on their way to make a deposit in the bank. They might be going to teach in a school or perhaps to shop in the local supermarket or to go to the mailbox. It's impossible to know unless you would ask the person where it is that they are going. Otherwise, we have no idea. We have no inkling of where the person may be headed or coming from. But say, for example, he writes, you notice somebody that's wobbling down the street, and his clothing is drenched, and it is smelling like alcohol, and his breath smells like liquor, and his feet are dragging along, and he has bloodshot eyes and completely intoxicated. We would not have to ask this person where it is that they were coming from. It would be clear that they just walked out of the local bar. Nobody would have to ask any questions. Just taking one look at the person's face, taking one look at the persona, we are able to recreate for ourselves the entire story without knowing where it is that they came from, without asking where it is that they are going. And suggests Rabbi Eliyahu Lapyan, there are some experiences in our lives that are meant to be so overwhelmingly powerful, that are meant to be so impactful for us, that even after we step away from them, there is meant to be an obvious and a noticeable change in all of our behavior and our overall personality. And he says it should be obvious to anyone who we encounter, to anyone who we come across, where it is that we are just coming from, because it should be written all over our faces. And says Rabbi Eliyahu Lapyan, this is what it means in Parshas Vayakhel. Moshe Rabbeinu gathers in the Jewish people because he needs to teach them. And at the very end of Moshe Rabbeinu's shir, obviously, everybody goes home. But says the Torah, that was not enough. Vayetzu kaladas b'nei Yisrael milifnei Moshe. When the Jewish people took leave from listening to the words of Moshe Rabbeinu, they acted differently. They were influenced, they were impacted in a deeply profound way. And it was obvious to anyone who they came across that they were just coming from spending time with Moshe Rabbeinu. It was written all over their faces. You couldn't be the same personality after you spend time in the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was a life-changing experience. And that, says Rabbi Yehiel Lapian, is what the experience of a Jew is all about. We encounter greatness every day, all the time. We live among great people. And as a people, we go through very powerful and life-changing experiences. Just think about every day. We are blessed to be able to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu three times a day when we daven. We can learn. Some people learn the Daf Yomi. Some people attend a shir. Some people are part of a chesed committee. Other people are part of a chevra kadisha. And some people are involved in organizing tzedakah campaigns and doing mitzvahs and being involved in such incredible acts of chesed and kindness. But what do we look like when we take leave from all of these experiences? Says Rabbi Yehiel Lapian, that is our job and that is our challenge. Vayetzu kol hadas b'nei Yisrael milifnei Moshe. Do we look like we have just taken leave from something that has really impacted our lives so profoundly? When we are done with our mitzvah for the day, he writes, do we simply look like everyone else on the street, speaking and acting the same way that we did before, talking to our children, talking to our spouses, talking to our family members in the same way that we may have before? Or is it clear to everyone that we have just finished a lofty and an otherworldly experience? We have just been in touch with godliness. Is that something that is written all over us? Does it change our persona? And what I learned from this is that mitzvah observance very often, for many of us, becomes a checklist. We have a routine, which is why this period has been so difficult for many people, because we're so off of our routine. Everybody who's going really wild about minyanim, I wonder, have they never missed a minyan before? But there's something about the routine of the minyan. I'm not talking negatively, but there's something about it. It's just part of what we do. And now that we've been thrown off our schedule and thrown off the routine, it's something that's become very difficult for us. But what does that routine do for us? After we light Shabbos candles, and after we keep Shabbos, and after we sit at the Seder, and after we shake the lulav, after we hear the shofar being blown, are we somewhat transformed as people? Do we have a different perspective? And do other people look at us differently? Rabbi Avadia Yosef writes in his Sefer on Pirkei Avos a very beautiful comment where he says, it's obviously a drasha, it's not the pashup shot in the pasuk, but he says, the Torah says, I'm sorry, in Tehillim it says, Shesulim beveis Hashem, bechatzros Elokeinu yafrichu. Says Rabbi Avadia Yosef, al derech hadrash. So often we see people who are shesulim. Shesulim means you are implanted, you are embedded in the Beis Hashem. You can see people who spend their entire day and night in the Beis Medrash, in the Beis HaKnesses, people who are involved as community activists, people who are involved in overwhelming acts of chesed, literally spending their day in the Beis Hashem. That's what they do all day, every day. But at the end of their workday, when they step away from these experiences, when they are bechatzros Elokeinu, when they step away from the Beis Hashem itself, and now they are on the periphery, they're in the courtyard, what does it look like? He says, yafrichu. So often they wither away. They fall apart. It did not make a lasting impression on them because those experiences were not real. That experience fades away and it very quickly dissipates. And it's apparent that the mitzvah opportunity that they have been involved with was not something that has successfully penetrated their overall personality or their overall experience of life. Kabbalas HaTorah, as we know, Chag HaShavuos, Zman Matan Torasenu, is a uniquely uplifting experience. And albeit this year, it was probably different for most of us than it was in previous years. But still, we said in the davening, Zman Matan Torasenu. Shavuos is a day when we really expect to think about ourselves as the ones who are once again engaging in accepting the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Matan Torah was a day when Ve'erastich li li'olam, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you are going to be married to me, betrothed to me forever. That was the day when we married HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we became united with him. And I ask myself every year after Chag HaShavuos, are we any different as a people or as individuals now that we have once again married HaKadosh Baruch Hu? A number of years ago I don't remember if it was from the Chidah. If it was, he should get the credit. If it wasn't, he shouldn't be blamed. But I couldn't find it today when I was looking before I came to give the shiur. So I believe one of the Mefarshim writes the following story, that there's a young child who's invited to his first wedding, and he's very excited about it, but he has no idea what a wedding is. He doesn't understand what it means to be married. So the young child is asking all kinds of questions in anticipation for the wedding. And he says, "Like, just tell me, what happens? I know we got an invitation, but what is this all about?" And the parents explain that there's a man and a woman who are about to get married, and there's going to be a big celebration. There's going to be a big band and music and flowers and a whole big to-do there. And the child is really excited. He's looking forward to this very first wedding that he's ever going to be at. And then the child says to his parents, "How am I going to know who the chassan and the kala actually are? You know, you walk into the hall, and I'm sure there's a lot of people there, but how am I going to know who is really the chassan and who perhaps is the kala?" And says the chidah, the way to know that is, you tell the child the following. You come to the wedding, and certain people are going to be dressed up. But the chassan looks dressed up, as do many of the people there, and he's wearing his tuxedo, and he has the flower in his lapel, and he has all kinds of beautiful clothing, and the kala has all kinds of beautiful jewelry, and there are many people who look very nicely dressed up, and many people who wear gowns, and many people who might be wearing tuxedos or flowers in their jackets. So how are you supposed to know who precisely is the chassan and who perhaps is the kala? And the way to know is, at the very end of the celebration, when everybody else goes home, there's only one person who takes the kala home with him. And that is how you know who the chassan and the kala actually are. And therefore, says the Chidah, we are misameach on Chag HaShavuos, we are misameach on Simchas Torah, and we think about how much the Torah means to us, and we wonder once again what it means to be married to the Torah. And says the Chidah, what is the measure of a person who really once again was reunited with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How do we clearly define the person who is married to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and united in a really meaningful way? The answer is, look at the very end of the celebration and let us see, who is it that actually brings the Torah home with them? When all the celebration is over, when all of Klal Yisrael goes back to their regular offices, when everybody goes back home, is there anybody out there who actually bothered to take the kala home with them? Is there anybody out there who actually spent the time to figure out, what did Zman Matan Torah Seinu really mean to me? And how has it impacted my life going forward? There's been a lot of discussion about how we're going to go back to Minyanim. Many people have gone back to Minyanim already, and it's taking up a lot of our time thinking about the logistical nightmare that this is and making sure that everyone's going to be as safe as possible. But I often think about this. Many have discussed, what are we going to do about the Sifrei Torah? And you look on all the Aguda protocols and the OU protocols, and no one should kiss the Sifrei Torah, because if we kiss it, then we're going to transmit potential virus from one person to another. So it made me think a lot about kissing a Sefer Torah. Last week, I attended a chasana, albeit a tiny chasana, but it was a very special thing to be a part of. And I was thinking to myself, you know, a chasana and a kala, when they leave their parents' home, they give a kiss to their parents right before they walk down the aisle. You'll always see that children hug and kiss their parents. And then, when a chassan and kala become married to one another, they embrace each other as well. But there's a big difference between those two embraces, because they're highlighting two different relationships and two different experiences. Sometimes we give a hug and a kiss because we are becoming closer, and we want to be engaged in this relationship forever. And we embrace because it's something that's powerful to us, and it's something that we want to be a part of for all eternity. Sometimes we give a hug and a kiss because we see something and we're about to take leave from that item, from that person, from that relationship that means so much to us. We give a hug and a kiss because we know it's going to be a long time until we once again come back to that. So a child goes off to Eretz Yisrael for the year, they give a big embrace to their parents. Why? Because they understand that it's going to be a while until they have that close, upfront relationship with their parent that they always appreciated until this point. Now there's a transitional period. I was thinking a lot about, over Yom Tov, about the relationship between Rus and Naomi, as opposed to the relationship between Arpa and Naomi. If you look in the Psukim, the Navi tells us that both of them gave an embrace, gave a kiss to their mother-in-law Naomi. But it was two very different kinds of kisses. Rus gave a kiss and said, "Verus dav kaba, I'm going to embrace, I'm going to kiss you, and I want to stay with you forever. Basher telchi eleich, basher talini alin, whatever happens to you is going to happen to me. And I want to be engaged with you forever. I want this to be an everlasting relationship." And to highlight that relationship, she decides to give a huge embrace. And Arpa also gives an embrace. Arpa also gives a kiss. But she ultimately goes in the opposite direction. We're all talking about hugging and kissing a Sefer Torah and whether we have a right to or not. Let's think very carefully when we kiss the Sefer Torah as we go to shul. When we give the Sefer Torah an embrace, what kind of kiss is that? Is it the kiss of Rus? Or is it the kiss and the embrace of Arpa? Are we saying to the Torah, "It was very nice to spend time with you. Now I'm off to my day in business. Now I'm off to do the things that have nothing to do with you. And the rest of my day is not going to be thinking at all about what God or the Torah expect of my behavior"? Or am I saying the Rus kind of embrace, which is, "I am so proud, I am so happy to be a part of your life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I give a kiss and an embrace because Verus Dav Kaba, I expect this to be a major part, a major force of everything in my life, and I will never ignore it, I will never forget it." And that is the opportunity we have every year on Chag HaShavuos, every time that we think about what Kabbalah HaTorah and our reunification with God means, and it's the opportunity after Shavuos is over to ask ourselves, what was that celebration all about? What is our commitment? Vayetzu kaladaz b'nei Yisrael milifnei Moshe. Are we any different now that we've had this experience? Do we look like we've come from doing something special? Or are we the same individuals that we were before Chag HaShavuos and before the meaningful experience that this Yom Tov is supposed to be for all of us, collectively and individually as well? So what can we take away from Chag HaShavuos? Well, that can go in a million different directions, but I just like to take one very important takeaway that I think is critical, especially for those of us who are involved in the tech world of today, and I would venture to say anybody who's on Zoom tonight and figuring out how to get on here is involved in this. So let's just think about this, and let's try to incorporate its lessons into the lives that we are all living. There was a study published by McKinsey, and it's something that to me is a very important one. I would encourage all of you to look it up. You can Google it later. It's called Recovering from Information Overload. Okay, look it up later. Recovering from Information Overload. And I felt these last couple of months have been an opportunity for some people to recover from information overload, whereas for other people, it's been an opportunity to be overloaded with information. And they're watching, and they're looking, and they're listening, and you're getting so much information that you have no idea what to do with it anymore. But this is really something to think about. It's something to consider when we live in the information age, in the info age that we all are a part of. So the published material, it's probably 10 pages long, and I just highlighted a few paragraphs from it that are important for us. Always on, multitasking work environments are killing productivity, are dampening creativity, and are making us all unhappy. For all the benefits of the information technology and communications revolution, it has a well-known dark side, information overload and its close cousin, attention fragmentation. A body of scientific evidence demonstrates fairly conclusively that multitasking makes human beings less productive, less creative, less able to make good decisions. If we want to be effective leaders, we must stop. So what do they suggest that we all do? We are being overloaded with information. And that is the expectation of all of us living in this world today. So what are we supposed to do? So they suggest, find time to focus, filter out the unimportant, and forget about work every now and then. Forget about work every now and then. We tend to believe that by doing several things at the same time, we can better handle the information rushing toward us and get more done. What's more, multitasking, interrupting one task for another, can sometimes even be fun. Unfortunately, the current research indicates the opposite. Multitasking unequivocally damages our productivity. So if multitasking is not the answer, what is? Some combination of the three F's, I think of it, and the three F's that they suggest are focusing, filtering, and forgetting. Focusing, filtering, and forgetting. We are living in an information overload. And because of that, we don't have the opportunity to properly focus on the things that we need to be paying attention to. Why is this relevant to Chag HaShavuos? Well, I think about it every year for the following reason. In Parshas Tetzaveh, the Torah gives us all the instructions of how the Kohen Gadol is meant to behave throughout his service. And, as we know, one of the begadim that he has to wear, he has many beautiful begadim, but one of the begadim that he needs to wear is the tzitz. On top of his head, he has to wear a golden bar that says on it, it's emblazoned on his forehead, Kodesh LaHashem. Now, as for Moshe Feinstein in his beautiful Sefer on Chumash Darash Moshe, do you really believe that the Kohen Gadol, who is the most sublime human being alive, who is doing his job in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, do you really believe that he's the one who needs a golden plate on his head that says Kodesh LaHashem? Doesn't the Kohen Gadol know that every moment of his life is Kodesh LaHashem? So why does he need that on his head? And says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you can be the Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh HaKadashim, on Yom HaKippurim, you have the triumvirate. You can have it all, and yet it is so easy even for you in that place to be distracted. The great Aaron HaKohen, on Yom Kippur, being Maktir Ktoris in the Kodesh HaKadashim, holiest place on earth, holiest man on the holiest day, and yet he can lose focus. Because everybody sometimes has the ability to lose focus. And therefore, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's important that even the Kohen Gadol have a reminder emblazoned on his forehead that he always has to remember that he is Kodesh LaHashem, that everything that he does is holy, is sanctified, is consecrated. That is his life. He cannot lose his concentration. He has to always be attentive. He cannot be distracted from what it is that he's supposed to be doing, and even he has the ability to be distracted, and that is why he needs that reminder. In Parshas Mishpatim, when the Torah gives the description of Moshe Rabbeinu going up on Har Sinai to accept the Luchos, so there the Torah says something that really I think is one of the takeaways from Chag HaShavuos. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up, and he's told, Alei Elai Hehara, I'd like you, Moshe Rabbeinu, come up onto the mountain, v'heyesham, and I want you to be there. So Rashi picks up on this obvious redundancy. Obviously, alei elai hahara. If you're going to come up to the mountain, you're going to be there. So what does it mean, heyesham? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to be told to be there? So Rashi says what it means is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, you're going to be here for a long time, so get yourself comfortable, roll up your sleeves, find a comfortable chair, because you're going to be here for a long, extended period of time, and I want to make sure that you're comfortable before we begin. So that's what it means, v'heyesham. One of the great Hasidic Rebbes, Rabbi Cheskel Mikuzmir, suggests an alternative shot, which is so powerful, and he says, perhaps what it means is no. We are being told that even the great Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was invited by none other than Melech Malchei Hamlachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to learn Torah together with him, the most sublime, otherworldly experience. Imagine if anyone would have such an invitation. And yet Moshe Rabbeinu has to be reminded, it's not good enough to come. Alei Elai Hahara, but that is not enough. Heyesham, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't get distracted. I want you to come onto the mountain and focus and be solely focused on what it is that we are doing. And I understand that you are Moshe Rabbeinu. And I understand that I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I know that now you were invited up to the heavens to come study Torah with the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, but yet he has to be reminded, Heyesham. How often do we have opportunities to spend time with a spouse, to spend time with a child, to spend time with a grandchild, and we're there, and we clear our schedule, and maybe we cancel a business meeting, or we cancel some other thing that we had to do, and yet we're there, but we're just not there. Because of the information overload, we have so many other things swimming around our heads, so many other worries, and so many articles to catch up on, and so many emails we need to respond to, and so many texts that are coming in, and all the WhatsApp messages. We just have so many different things going on that we are not there. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, when he invites Moshe Rabbeinu, just remember, when you are expected to be somewhere, it doesn't just mean that you're supposed to be there physically, it means Heyesham, I expect you to really be there and to focus your attention and don't lose your attention. In Shir HaShirim, when we describe the beautiful relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people, so one pasuk that caught my attention a number of years ago was when the Ribbono Shel Olam says, Livavtini ba'achas me'enayich, You have loved me with one of your eyes. So what does it mean? Ba'achas me'enoich. And the Medrash asks, what does it mean? So before I found the Medrash, I asked my father, what does it mean, livavtini ba'achas me'enoich? Some people say Shir Hashirim every Erev Shabbos. When they think about the relationship with Shabbos, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does it mean, you love me with one eye? How do you love somebody with one eye? So my father told me a number of years ago that he always thought it meant the following. Sometimes you have a relationship that's so powerful, people are so close to each other, they don't have to say a word. I just wink at the other person, they know what I mean, they know what I'm thinking, I don't have to say anything. Because my relationship is so deep that they understand me so well. I see somebody's winking at me, so I understand them so well that I don't even need to say anything. I get it. Just by looking at their one eye, I don't have to have any more expression, I don't need to hear a word, I get it right away. And that's what it means. My father said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says we have such a deep and powerful relationship, we don't even have to say anything. Livavtini be'achas me'enoich. We just look at each other, one quick glance, and we know exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of us. He knows what we need, he knows what we know what he needs, and it's a great, powerful, very potent relationship. That is what my father told me until I found the Medrash. And the Medrash gives a spin on this pasuk, literally flips it on its head. The Medrash says, Mahu be'achas me'enoich. What does it mean that when we came to Har Sinai, we loved HaKadosh Baruch Hu with one eye? Says the Medrash, it means, Ba'ayin Hasheni kvar hayu mistaklim al ha'egel. Unbelievable comment. This is a criticism of the Jewish people. It means you were standing at Har Sinai, you were looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the face, you fainted because you were overwhelmed by the experience, and yet you were only looking at me with one eye. And Ba'ayin Hasheni, your second eye was distracted. Standing at Har Sinai, listening to the Ribono Shel Olam, your second eye was looking somewhere else, and not just looking somewhere else, you were looking at the prospect of making an Egel Azav. It was already swimming around people's minds, thinking about how we're going to do this, and what are we going to come up with to outdo Moshe Rabbeinu, and to outdo everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents in our lives. And that is a startling criticism that the Medrash has from this pasuk, Livavtini Be'achas Me'enoich. And what we see from this is, if there's maybe a takeaway we can think on Chag HaShavuos, there's so much, obviously, that we need to take away from this Yom Tov. And Zman Matan Torasenu is a time that's supposed to be a powerful unification of the Jewish people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu once again. But let us just remind ourselves of these two experiences. Number one, Moshe Rabbeinu is told, come on to the mountain, but it's not good enough. Heyei Sham, you need to pay attention. You need to be there. I expect you to be fully immersed, full immersion with the Ribono Shel Olam and with the experience that you need to have. And number two, what the Medrash tells us, Livavtini ba'achas me'enoich. Don't think you're above it. You can be the greatest parent in the world, the greatest spouse in the world, the greatest sibling in the world, the greatest grandparent in the world, and yet you are not above it. Klal Yisrael themselves were with the Ribono Shel Olam at Har Sinai, and yet they got distracted. Their focus was not where it was supposed to be. And if it happens to them, and if it could happen to Moshe Rabbeinu that he needs a warning, and like Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, it can happen to the Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom HaKippurim, then it means it can happen to all of us, as wonderful as we might be. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands of all of us. Full immersion. Whatever it is that we're doing, be fully engaged, be fully involved. Don't allow ourselves to be distracted. And especially in our world, it is so easy to be distracted. Make time, steal time for ourselves, for those who are close to us. Think about how much more their relationships are worth than whatever text may have just come in, than whatever email might be answered, than whatever phone call I just missed. This relationship is one that is there forever, and it's something that we need to invest in. And in order to have an investment and a real appreciation, we need to make sure that we give our full attention, full immersion. Doesn't mean the whole day, but it means every so often, we have to pull ourselves away of all that's going on and be fully immersed, fully engaged in whatever it is that we are supposed to be at that moment. So that's just a small takeaway from Chag HaShavuos. I see that it's 9 o'clock, so Rabbi Leibowitz is about to begin. And I thank you all once again for